Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the new Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's ALLBIRDS.com, code SUPER24.
Welcome to The Player's Voice, a podcast brought to you by the Gaelic Players Association in collaboration with Real Talks. My name is Alan O'Mara, a former Cavan goalkeeper now working as a performance and wellbeing consultant. And this week, I was joined by Aisling Thompson. Aisling was a key figure on the Cork Camogie team that won four All-Irelands in the last decade, and she also lifted the O'Duffy Cup as captain in 2015. She tells us why she's still so driven to return Cork back to the promised land after back-to-back All-Ireland final defeats, and describes the pain that she's been feeling since the final whistle went in this year's championship decider. As well as her many highs and lows on the field, Aisling has been open and honest in the past about mental health challenges she has faced. During this conversation, she provides so much insight into her experience with depression, anxiety, and panic attacks, and explains how self-awareness and emotional intelligence have positively impacted her life. This podcast is brought to you as part of BO360, a GPA program that empowers inter-county players across four key areas: life skills, well-being, dual career, and transitions. Please go to bo360.gaelicplayers.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. Aisling, thanks so much for joining us on the Player's Voice podcast. This is a conversation I've been looking forward to having for a while. I know we've crossed paths before at different mental health events and charity events and spoken at different things. I talked to you today just kind of on the back of recently having lost an All-Ireland final, and I kind of just wanted to start there with how have you been since that game against Kilkenny, and kind of what are the following days like for a player trying to deal with a defeat like that?
Well, first of all, thanks a million for having me. I'm delighted to sit and have a chat. But yeah, I think the initial moments were probably very tough. I think last year was probably a bit of shock. It kind of took us a while to get back to an All-Ireland final against Galway, and I think when we got over the semi-final last year, that was kind of what we were aiming for, because there was a couple of years previous where we couldn't get past that point. So I think getting to Croke Park last year was probably the biggest achievement in itself. But I think this year, obviously, we had 110% belief that was going to be, you know, the outcome if we had to perform on the day. And, you know, you're never guaranteed anything in life, and I think you make your own luck. But you have to look at Kilkenny, we knew coming into that final that they were going to do everything in their power to win that game, because that's just the type of people that they are, you know, that's the type of athletes they are. It's the history of Kilkenny. So we knew it was never going to be an easy battle. But yeah, just, I think the final whistle was probably the most heart-wrenching whistle that I've ever heard in my life, to be honest. I can only compare it to probably one club loss that we had in the semi-final going back a few years. But yeah, it was extremely hard, and I think it was even harder as well looking at the younger players on the team, you know. I think, like, for them, obviously, we instill a belief, but I think how the year went on and how we've grown so close over the last 2 years, it was like something that, like, we really thought, you know, a dream that was going to come true for us, and it didn't. And yeah, the few days, obviously, we had a bit of crack and stuff, but there was times where we'd just stop and people would be crying, and, you know, you could be having the best time of your life or singing a song, and next minute there's somebody bawling in the corner, and that would set everybody else off. So it kind of just went to show too how much it meant to people, you know, because bridging the gap and those friendships was something that we've really tried to work on over the last couple of years. But it happened so naturally that I think that's probably why it hurt the most. Like,
and when that whistle sounds, Aisling, like you alluded to it there, like, what's the immediate feeling or thought you have in that moment? And you kind why do you think this one hurts, say, more than maybe previous defeats or in previous years?
I will personally, for myself, I had the last shot of the game to draw, so I think that kind of speaks for itself, you know. I never thought, like, I've always looked back, I said it to the girls afterwards, I've always looked back on matches like GA games or football, whatever the case may be, and looked back on teams that have been defeated in the final moments by a miss, you know, either a free or in terms of play. And I never thought that I would ever be in that position, I guess, as a player. And I always felt so sorry for them, so remorseful. But I think just personally for me, that was probably one of the hardest moments, like, split second decision moments, like, that if I had carried the ball, would it have been different? Or if I hadn't even going for the shot itself, I knew it was the last ball, maybe if that thought didn't run through my mind, it probably would have went over the bar. But so yeah, it's something that'll probably eat at me for a long time. But I always say it to the girls, there are certain moments in a game that essentially might define your career, or, you know, you don't want it to let something like that define your career. Do you know what I mean? You want to move past it and use it, maybe use it as ammunition for the next year, hopefully. But it was just, and to answer your question, that's what made it so different for me. I've never, obviously people are not going to say I'm responsible, but you hold that responsibility, you hold that accountability for a moment like that. Was that was, you know, the definition of the final whistle for me anyway.
Yeah, and then, like, when, like, obviously we're if people like myself are at home watching the game, and, you know, you can see it gets into those final minutes and it's frantic and there's a free goes over the bar. But you're like, what you're saying there, and if I'm hearing it correct, like, you're, as you have the ball, like, you're fully aware of the responsibility that you have, that what the shot means as you line it up. You're not in, like, a flow state or kind of just, like, drifting around. You're very aware at that point in the game kind of what's on the line. Did I pick that up right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just that it was strange, because usually when you're on the pitch and you're playing, you know, because people often ask, like, what's it like? Like, you must be so nervous. But once the whistle goes, for me, I don't have many thoughts that run through my head, you know, during the game, unless it's game related. Like, but, you know, that was more of playing off emotion, I feel. And I just feel like if that emotion and that maybe a little bit of pressure didn't creep in, would it have went over? Like, I remember saying it to myself, like, this is the last ball, like, you know. I knew, because I knew once we had possession and it came back down the field, I knew it was the last play. And maybe if I hadn't overthought it, it would have went over, but shoulda, woulda, coulda, like, you know.
No, that's like, it's the, you've got to be in the arena to be able to take those shots. And, like, even to that point, you know, like, we've all been there, if you've been there as a player or you've been there as a spectator, like, when games are in the melting pot like that too, Ashton, like, there's genuinely, there's some kind of people will go looking for the ball and want it. There's genuinely others who you'll have played with, and I know I have, that will take it and pop it on. They can't kind of get rid of the ball quick enough because they're either not a shooter or they want to pass it on. Like, in your head, mentally around that time, were you actively looking to get on the ball? Were you comfortable taking that shot, or did it kind of find its way to you and you just, again, you felt like you had to just kind of have a rip at it, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I knew, like, not, of course, if a break was going to come to me, I wanted the ball. Like, I was just hoping that we would get a break no matter who's on it. And yeah, once I couldn't believe it actually fell out to me. I don't even know what happened in the moments leading up to that ball, but it just came loose to the side. I think there was two maybe Kilkenny players around me, so maybe I thought they were much closer than they were. I think I just remember there was yards in front of me, but obviously, you know, I would have had the confidence to take the shot. It's just unlucky that it didn't, you know, it veered right and didn't go over. But I knew once I took it, it was wide, whereas everyone else in the crowd were, like, waiting, you know, in those final seconds to see. But I knew it, like, I turned around straight away. I knew it was gone. Like, I knew that was it.
And then, like, in the days since that moment, like, how often has that moment been in your head? How many times have you replayed that or relived that? Yeah, is it something that's been, like, prominent in your mind?
Yeah, every day, like, maybe could be anything up to 5-10 times a day. Like, it just constantly runs through my head, like, what, even visualizing the ball in my hand, even taking the shot, I still have that visualization of the moment, like, so And, you know, like, even certain people said it to me, like you said, to have the confidence to even take the shot, like, that I should, you know, give myself more credit than what I think. But again, me, being a perfectionist, being somebody that wants to win, you know, it's just, it's never really going to take away the hurt, I guess, you know.
Yeah, it's for sure one of the most challenging parts of playing elite sport, when there's so much work has gone in and so much on the line, and it comes down to fine seconds, like little moments like that. So how, and at the end of the day, as we all know, every time we go to see an All-Ireland final, be it in football, hurling, camogie or whatever it may be, like there has to be a winner, there has to be a loser. So that how have you been individually, I suppose, since in the last couple of days or the days since, kind of with that stewing around? First of all, how has that been for you?
Well, to be fair, I've been lucky enough because I was actually invited up to Belfast on Thursday. So we were obviously, you know, enjoying our time together as a team up to Thursday. And then I headed off to Belfast with Dara for a few days. And we only got back last night, and I headed down to a camp then in Adair this morning. So I've tried just to keep myself as busy as possible, because I just find when, you know, when I have those moments, even if I go to the toilet, like, it's just those moments where I'm on my own. That's when it starts. That's when I start to think, and even talking about it now, I have a frog in my throat, like, you know, it's just, and I don't mind talking about it. I don't, because I think in order for me to move on from it and get something from it, like you do, I don't want to keep it inside either. You know, I do like having conversations with people, because it just, that's one thing that kind of helps me, you know, in certain situations, like certain difficult situations, I suppose, upstairs. It kind of helps to talk about it, because when I start thinking about things, that's when it gets kind of the better of me, you know. That's when it puts me down, is when I start thinking, overthinking.
And then obviously you mentioned talking about it there, Ashton, like, I suppose, what in terms of the days afterwards with family and with friends, like, are they bringing it up? Are they talking about it? Are they trying to help you kind of not talk about it? You know, what's those kind of, those relationships like with loved ones and with people close to you who obviously care for you and want what's best for you, but it's kind of, I'm sure it's a tricky situation to try and help someone navigate and to kind of process.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I haven't really seen many people. My brother was there for the night in Dublin, one of my brothers, so that was kind of the conversation done. And then my other brother texted me as well, he rang me as well straight away, because I didn't actually get to see my family after, because I just couldn't really face, you know, having I wasn't physically able to have conversations, because obviously the tears were flowing, and it was, you know, hugely disappointing for us, but as equally as disappointing for them. So I wouldn't have been able to hold a conversation, but like, we're just the type of family anyway that we'll talk about it maybe initially and kind of leave it there, you know. It's something that wouldn't be repeated, like, again, unless maybe somebody else, like, came in and brought it up. But usually we leave things to bed, like, we don't regurgitate anything.
And then what's it like being for yourself, say, as one of the more experienced players in the panel now? Like, I know, like, you made your debut back in 2006, I think it was. And so you've probably played, you have 4 All-Irelands, 2 All-Stars, and like with Cork. And like, it's obviously played with different groups, and almost they must feel like different teams in some ways compared to this one, even though you're playing for the same team. But has that made it any more difficult or easier that you have that experience in the past? But then are you carrying extra weight because you are one of the elder or like more experienced players in the group?
Yeah, it's definitely two sides of the coin, you know. I feel like before, and again, the game has moved on as well. Like, I feel like the game in general is so different, like, to how it's played now as to how it was played before. I feel like even in terms of strength and conditioning and the speed of the game is completely changed. Whereas before, you could just go to Cork, train 3 days a week, never touch a gym, and it was good enough, you know. It was good enough to get over the line. Whereas now you wouldn't make it out of the group if you didn't consider like strength and conditioning. But just in terms of the players then as well, yeah, I guess, like, looking back, you had like Rena Buckley, Breach Carkery, Jim O'Connor, Orla Cotter, you know, Annie Geary. These massive names like Jenny O'Leary, you know, and again, it's a different generation of players too, whereas before, that's all you kind of did. There was no social media. There was no distraction. There was no criticism as such. So I think you played off the cuff, but I think it came natural to players, you know, before. Whereas I think with this generation, like, confidence is a massive thing. Even getting the younger players to believe that they're good enough, like, that's a job in itself too. The psychology of the sport is massive now. So yeah, before it was like you just kind of, what could I say, you just slotted in as a player, and maybe if you weren't on form, you didn't feel the pressure of it because you had somebody else there that was, you know, and not even one, you had probably 10 players performing on the day, like, so the pressure, it wasn't as big. And I guess when you are a younger player too, anyway, you're not expected to carry the team, especially when you've so many influential names involved and you know, huge sports people. Like, I just don't think there's as much pressure. But obviously, as you get older, it's like, as Jim O'Connor got older, I'm sure those players would have felt the same pressures too, that, like, you know, there's a lot of weight here, like, and if we don't perform, like, that's going to filter down through the rest of the team, because if you're confident, they're confident. And that's kind of the way I would look at it now, I'll be honest. And it's not that I don't have confidence in the rest of the girls, but I just don't think there's as many, I wouldn't say influential players, but, you know, standout figures, because with us, you see the fall off. There were so many of those players that retired at one time or in a very short space of time. So we kind of had to rebuild with a totally new panel. And that's something that I've never been familiar with, you know, as an experienced player. But to be fair to the girls, like, I think we probably don't, not that we don't give them enough credit, but I can see a lot of similarities in that older generation to the new generation. I just think the one thing that, like, not that we lack, but the one thing that you need to really build on is confidence and kind of getting players to believe that they can be not just as good as what's gone, but even better, you know. So it's two sides of the coin. But yeah, I would feel the pressures now, like, and feel like, you know, my performance and how I am seen, even to the girls, how I carry myself, how I train, you know, is a massive part of their game, like, and how they perform.
And, like, you mentioned confidence a number of times there, Ashton, and, like, obviously it's, like, it's a desired thing that, like, any, especially in sports, but also, like, you know, in business or in life, that people want, like, people, confidence is a desirable thing, but it's also in some ways like a secret sauce, that there's many different ways to it, and it can be, like, created in different ways. I suppose in terms of trying to instill that now in a group with teammates and I'm sure a management team, like, how has that process been, trying to instill confidence, and kind of how have you gone about practically trying to help that process along?
Well, I think it definitely comes from the top down. So I think definitely how myself, like, comes natural to Laura Tracy, Hannah Looney, Amy O'Connor, these players, I just think you're almost like a role model as such. Like, even when these girls first came into the setup, like, we had this conversation last week, like, they were in awe of us, you know, and they said it, like, that we've just been so influential in terms of how they approach training or how they approach a game or how they apply themselves. Like, we would have been much looser, like, as young ones in the group, like, you know, growing up, like, with the older Cork team, I'd say their hearts were broke from us, like, whereas these girls are just, yeah, like, how they apply themselves is just phenomenal. And I've always sat back and literally just said to myself, we're so lucky to have such a group, such a good group of girls, you know. But in terms of how you do that, I think it's just how you carry yourself. Like, it's not one or two things. Obviously, I try to encourage girls as much as I can, and whenever I suppose I can familiar familiarise myself with players from an emotional aspect too. Like, I know looking at a girl in training, if she's not going well, I just get the sense that there could be something else going on in the background. And, you know, that's obviously a huge part of it too, like in terms of confidence. So I think just reaching out to them, carrying them along, I'd be texting them, I'd be ringing them if there's any problem that they have. I always reassure to the girls that they can come to me no matter what the situation or problem is, or if there's something they don't agree with, even from a management perspective, I try to liaise on that, again, in terms of performance or personal background. So I think when they have that outlet and they have that shoulder, like, I think that even in itself builds confidence, because it's very hard to come into a setup and looking at names like Laura Tracy, Hannah Looney, all these girls, it's quite an intimidating thing to do, like, especially when we're so dependent on these young girls. Like, the majority of our team are so young. But I just constantly reassure them and encourage them, and I think that's all you can do, really.
Yeah, it's clear from listening to you there, you know, how invested you are within the group from both an individual perspective, but also then from a leadership perspective, and trying to drive a culture or kind of whatever, trying to drive confidence, whatever kind of words you want to associate with it. But I suppose I'm just curious, as, like, again, saying, like, your debut goes back to all the way to 2006, and you've mentioned loads of those names there, like Breach, Corkery, and to have experienced that side of it. What's still driving you now to be at the forefront of that kind of that drive to get Cork back to the top table there, and to do all that extra work that you just described? Like, you know, when you're the 20-year-old on the panel, you can kind of get to rock up and kind of swing your hurl, mind your own business and do your thing. And it's like, yeah, cool, I'm heading on now with the rest of the girls. What's kind of driving you now to take on more? I mean, I say work in the sense, but I don't mean it in the literal sense, but more responsibility and that drive to help this team be successful.
I think it's just inevitable as to how good they are. And obviously people only see it from a performance point, or whenever maybe we're in our semi or final, it's on TV, and it's very easy for people to judge, or even the handful of people that might turn up to one of our championship games. But I see this team three times a week, you know, I see what they go through, I see the personal challenges that they face. But I also see what they do on the training pitch. And we were so close this year, you know. I just think, and I guess then it comes down to two, that the friendships and the relationships that I've built with these people. And I think it just comes from within me too. Like, I've always had the attitude that only when it comes to the day that I can't keep up is the day that I'm going to retire. But you know, it's obviously very difficult too when you have such a good relationship with people, because I would be clingy in that sense. Like, I love emotion, I love friendships, I love the value of it. And for me, that was probably one of the most important things, even in the last 2 years. I think if those relationships and friendships weren't built, would I have the same mindset? I'm not sure, because it's the environment for me now. Is just as important as the sport itself. And I think just the environment itself, it's just, it would be very hard to walk away from. But I fully believe that when this team gets over the line, sooner if not later, that we'll be very hard to defeat once we can get past that barrier. And I want that for them. It's not just me. Like, there's a lot of girls on that team or panel that have never had, you know, they've never had All-Ireland success at senior level. And I know how much it meant to be as a young girl standing up there on the Hogan stand lifting the cup, but just as much as what it meant to be amongst my friends in that moment. And I want that so badly for them, because that's just something that money can't buy, and it's something that nobody else can ever take away from you. And I know looking at them how badly they want it. So if it's within my power, which I think it is at some point, to get them over the line, I'll do whatever it takes to do that. Like,
yeah, like in some ways, obviously, like we spoke earlier about the hardship and the pain of defeat, and you're carrying that still now because it's quite recent. But also, like, within your past, you have the other end of the scale of the joy and the elation and the camaraderie with groups that you're able to, I suppose, experience both, but also use them in a way that keeps driving you forward. Is that kind of if I pick that up right, that it's kind of combining in a way there to drive you forward?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, sport is kind of, it's like something that you just chase, like you chase that feeling. I think it's like anything else in terms of addiction, you just chase it, like. And I think, you know, a lot of people would even ask, like, how could you go back after all that work and defeated by such a fine margin? And, you know, even in my own head, you think after, like, we have to do this all over again, like, what a long road that it's going to be. But again, when I put myself in that mind frame, and when I'm on that training pitch, when I'm amongst that group, like, it's, I don't ever want to be anywhere else. And it's not even about results at that point. It's just, what else? Not what else would I be doing with my life, but I don't think there's anything else that can give me that feeling. Like, I don't think there's anything else in life that would be able to give me that feeling.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's helping you with a sense of certainly purpose towards the athletic part of your life and the sporting part, but also in ways, is it adding to who you are as a person in terms of that structure on your life and being around like-minded people and having those kind of softer benefits of being engaged and being competing at that level?
Yeah, absolutely. I always find, you know, in the off season, the most difficult, and Dara would actually be the same. Like, and I think it's just having that structure. Like, I'd be honest in telling you that I'm terrified of when I do retire. Like, I do want to have, you know, I want to make sure that there is something. And it's a big part of sport, like, after you retire, like, what are you going to do next? And it's something that does scare me. But again, I'm sure I'll come up with something. But just to go back to your question, like, it's the structure. It's those connections with people. It kind of keeps me in line, I guess. You know, It keeps me going, and the benefits that come from it. But also, I just feel like I have such a purpose in life when I'm playing the sport, but not only for me, but like, sport gives my family as well such a purpose. I said it before in an interview, that, like, the purpose in particular that it gives my family and what it does for them is just, it's priceless, like, you know. And again, it's not something that I like to carry as weight. It's just like, it's a proud feeling for me, like, that I can actually give them such emotion and such a good feeling. And, you know, even when they're down or whatever, it's like they might see then that Cork are winning or I'm doing something good. I think it just keeps everyone going in the family in general, like, so it serves a purpose both for me and everybody else, like.
Yeah, and I know you've spoken previously, which we'll come to in a couple of minutes, kind of how much sport has helped you at different aspects or different times of your life and in different aspects of your life, Ashton. But so when you said there, like, the idea of when you finish up, and I mean, you're into your 30s now. So, I mean, that day is not like super far away. It mightn't be this year, next year, the year after that, but it's within, like, you know, unless you go all Tom Brady on it and you're still playing when you're close to 50. But
I hope so.
You said there that it terrifies you or that it scares you. What do you mean by that? Like, what drives that kind of sense of fear or that feeling when you think about the idea of sport finishing up or not being actively part of that, like, community or that support network?
Yeah, well, it even, you know, again, I just get a taste of a kind of in the off season, like, just not having that structure. I think not having those moments with like-minded people, just being around something that you're striving to achieve. I know you can look at it from a work point of view and that as well, but I think it's just, I don't know, like, I would get anxiety and things like that as well, and obviously training is a massive part of that. I know you can go to the gym and it helps with anxiety, but more so for me it's being around people and, you know, aiming for something that we're trying to achieve. I think just the feeling that gives me and the security as such that it gives me is something that I'm afraid that I will lose when I do retire. Like, will it creep more into my mental health? You know, trying to let that go. It's like, without sport, and I would never want to be in that position, but I often think, like, without sport, like, what would I do? Like, what will make me happy? Like, what will keep my anxiety in check? Like, will I ever fall into depression again? Like, you know, naturally I think you have those fears as a person, because I do get a taste for it in the off season.
And, like, that idea of sport finishing up or not being part of your life. I suppose, like, if I could rewind the clock, like when you were younger, I think it was in 2009, like sport ultimately was taken away from you for a period after you'd been involved in a car accident. And is that kind of tied up in, obviously, that, I suppose, that car, when that accident happens, where like your identity is challenged and sport is removed, is it tied in any way to that, that, you know, your experience of when you didn't have sport as part of your life, but it wasn't great?
Yeah, I guess so. I think naturally trauma is something that never really leaves. Like, no, I wouldn't say that obviously the car accident might have led to certain things, but even looking at it now, years later, even after these interviews that I've done, I've still learned a lot. I've gained a lot of personal experience and looking at these situations in a different light. I think it was more to do with, well, again, obviously it led to it, but the people that I kind of had surrounded myself with and certain scenarios and situations that I ended up in inevitably led to those times. So I do think that it wouldn't be the biggest factor, but obviously it's always going to be in the back of my mind. But again, I kind of have those life skills moving on that I know that I'm always going to revolve myself around good people, and something that I have a keen eye for now in terms of, you know, when I do see danger or something negative, I always stray from it because I know what helps me and I know what's good for me, like in terms of people and things that I surround myself with. So I think back then it was a huge part of it, to be honest, and I think it's what led to that depression and life experience, I guess. I definitely have more life skills than what I ever thought I could have, you know, at this moment in time.
What are those life skills, Ashton, that you say you have now that help you mind your well-being, look after yourself, and that maybe help you fall or help you avoid spells of depression or help you cope with low mood or adversity? What are those skills that you have now that help, that maybe you didn't have when depression first entered your life or first kind of challenged you as a person?
Well, I think I've had certain conversations with people, you know, different people that would be close to me or even different people that would be involved in a psychology aspect or mental health that are linked to GA. And they've always said that I have an extremely high emotional barrier, but I'm very self-aware as well. I'm very aware in terms of my emotions. And like, let's say even I used to get like panic attacks and things like that. But now I know when it's coming on. And whereas before I would have had a fight or flight kind of attitude towards it and try and push it off. Whereas now I know how to handle myself in those moments. Again, I think it's just different triggers, what I surround myself with, different places maybe that I might end up in. Even on nights out in terms of, you know, drinking or anything like that, I know my limits. Again, I think it's maybe in terms of my preparation, even if I'm talking about nights out, I just know how to identify my triggers, I would say. And again, in the off season, it kind of, I don't think anxiety has always been a huge part of my life, but I don't know. I think it just comes down to self-awareness. It's very hard to explain in words, to be honest, but I just know my emotions and I know what triggers them and I know when to pick up the phone. Like, it's very easy for people to say to talk to someone, but I think it's equally as hard, if not more difficult, to actually pick up the phone. And I think that in itself is a life skill. And I'll always do it. If I feel a panic attack coming on, I'll ring my brother's fiance and she's always the first call. She doesn't even notice, like, that she's the first call when I'm having a panic attack, and she mightn't even know that I'm having one. But that's like one of the things that I'll do if I feel it coming on, or if I have anxiety, like I'll text someone or ring them or distract myself. Just things, simple things like that. Like, I know you mightn't even call them life skills as such, but I think just being so in touch with my emotions probably has helped me an awful lot. Like, whereas before I would have tried and pushed those emotions away. Like,
yeah, I totally, like, just as I'm listening to you there, like, I totally hear a greater sense of self-awareness in a way that's kind of from what you've described, like it lets you recognize and understand either what you're thinking or feeling in the moment, but also then it's helping you choose better actions at like in real time. Whereas maybe earlier in the journey, sometimes like you react in a negative way or a different way, or you a trigger kind of sends you in a different direction. But it sounds like it's just that it's been a constant process of trying to understand that relationship between like your thoughts, feelings and your actions. And I suppose, I don't know if I'm oversimplifying that, but I'm just kind of trying to recap a little bit for listeners or what I've found there. Cause I think sometimes we can kind of gloss over self-awareness and say, oh, is it a life skill? Is it not? But I think it's a hugely important life skill. I think it's a hugely important mental skill that doesn't just happen overnight. Like you don't read a book and then wake up and say, hey, I'm self-aware, or listen to a podcast on self-awareness. It's a lot of trial and error in good and bad decisions or good and bad actions that you have to reflect and learn on.
Yeah. And it gives you like a greater understanding, I think, too, of how to understand a person. Like before, if something happened and somebody didn't have my back, like I'd be like, I would never do that, you know, and I would always try and compare that person to myself. Whereas now I sit back and I'm like, not everybody is the same as you. Not everybody, you know, has had the same traumas or experiences. So you have to dissect people and you have to dissect situations. And I think I'm at a point now, 32 years later on, where, you know, I'm at a good place in terms of how to deal with those emotions and situations. Like, and I'm very grateful, you know, for certain experiences that might have been fairly traumatic. But I don't think, you know, I'd be in a position now to even speak about self awareness or emotions, like only for, like, you know.
And then I suppose in terms of where you're at now, and then say you've talked about there of feeling that sense of if it's anxiety building within you. And I suppose what are, for someone maybe that's listening that's never experienced a panic attack, or someone who doesn't know what that might be like, what's the feeling you feel building up kind of immediately? And then obviously you're saying you're able to call someone that kind of can help snap you out of that. Like, I'm sure in previous in life you weren't able to do that, and then the thing just spiraled or went kind of deeper. But if you could try and help us understand a little bit kind of what that feeling's like, and even how hard it is then to kind of to navigate it or to pivot out of it or to choose that action that gets you out of that swirl.
So like, I think just the mind is kind of scary because it's so powerful, you know. And sometimes I feel like I wish I didn't know myself so well, because I think even the thoughts of, you know, when I know what's happening in particular, I'd say it's obviously equally as scary when you don't know what's happening. But I think you just think the worst in that situation. Like anytime I get a panic attack, I think I'm going to die of a heart attack. Like it's just the first thing that comes to mind. And like my hands start sweating, but my just heart goes through the roof. And then obviously I'd lose like my chest. I wouldn't be able to breathe. My chest would close. So I think that's another thing too. It's like a claustrophobia kind of a feeling. So my windpipe would close and I feel like I can't breathe. And then I think, no, I'm actually dying now. I'm going to have a heart attack. Like, and then after, it's crazy. It's like the adrenaline. Then you start shaking, you go freezing. Eventually it does die down, but it's more, I usually make the call when I feel the sudden onset. So usually it builds, it will always build. I don't just get it out of anywhere. Once or twice it happened to me driving where it happened out of nowhere, and that was kind of scary. Or else, like, if I'm in the car, like, I'll drive to the nearest shop where I know there's people. So like in my head, I know if something happens to me, like, that I'm safe. I know it's a crazy thing to say, but I just think the worst in that moment, that like I'm going to die or I'm going to pass out or I'm going to have a heart attack, like, and all these thoughts start rushing back to my head, like, that, no, this is it now, this is it for me. Oh, it's a terrible, it's awful. I wouldn't wish it on my own worst enemy. But again, I haven't had a panic attack in I don't know how long, since I've been able to control them and like know my triggers, know when to act, like to ring someone straight away, because all it is a distraction. That's all you need is a complete distraction. I think, like Brazy talks about, I heard before that if he feels a panic attack coming on, he'll just get up and start running. He'll just get up and run. I heard that somewhere in the middle of the night, even if it is. He'll just get up and run because it's just a distraction. And that's kind of what I try to do straight away if I feel something coming on. But again, I think the biggest thing I learned too is not to fight it either. When you pick up the phone and distract yourself, you're not fighting it. You're just trying to distract yourself. Like, it's different. Because whereas I think if you try and stop it from happening, that's when it goes to the worst point. So it's like an anxiety attack. Like, once there's somebody with me, I feel safe and I'll just let the anxiety attack happen and eventually it stops. But I think when I start to fight it, that's when it goes out of control. Like, you just need to accept it's happening and move on. That's how I deal with it anyway.
And thank you for that, because I mean, there's so much there, and I can only imagine in terms of the emotional swirl that takes you on, and it takes a lot of courage to recap it like that. And I really appreciate you being so open and honest and vulnerable about that. And I suppose what I'm actually thinking about is, like, you're talking to me at the moment in terms of being further down the path where you can navigate that. And just because you can navigate it still doesn't mean it's a barrel of laughs. It's still a shit show to go through, and you've got to, like, you can accept it and you can breathe and you can concentrate on the next thing and all that. And it's all super helpful, but it still doesn't take away that it can be draining, that it can be stressful.
Oh yeah. It has a massive impact on my daily life. Like, you know, even training, it would have a huge impact on it.
If someone's listening now, Ashton, that maybe is experiencing high anxiety or high panic attacks, and is there, and I'm not just asking you for, like, you know, like, what piece of advice would you give them, but I suppose if you could pass on kind of, and you've already shared your experience there, which I think is just extremely helpful, but I do feel like there will be people listen to this that experience varying degrees of anxiety, of depression, of stress, of panic attacks. And I suppose if there is something you could pass on, or you did want to share with them, what might that be?
I just think for myself anyway, personally, it's like probably the worst thing I have, you know. Like, I look at people every day who are suffering or who are sick, who are ill. And again, I know it's a cliche, but like, and my anxiety, you know, I kind of appreciate it in some ways that, like, it has just taught me so much about myself. How I deal with certain situations, and I understand kind of where it's came from too, you know, where that trauma has kind of, where it has come from. But I just think, like, it's nothing to be ashamed of, and there's always something. Like, mine was 10 times worse, like, going back a couple of years ago. Like, I never even thought I would be to this point where I can actually control it in small parts, like. And I just think, like, it's sometimes I find it, even when I talk to people about it or certain situations or scenarios, I kind of find it intriguing, like, in ways, like, I find it very interesting, and how you can even kind of connect with other people in terms of their experience with it. I wouldn't say that, obviously, it's something that I'd wish on anyone, but you're, like, the one thing is that you're not alone in it, you know. I think everybody in the country has some form of anxiety. Or is going through something mentally. Like, that's no secret, but I just think, like, that there's always something to benefit or gain from something negative, no matter what it is, even if it is anxiety or going back to sport, if you lose an All-Ireland final, like, there's always something to gain or benefit from it, and it will always get better, like, once you put the time in and you make the effort, you know. I think there's always room for growth, like, but there's always, like, there's always people a lot worse out there than yourself, like, and having anxiety to me is probably a lot smaller. Now, in my head, it's a huge thing, but looking at it from the outside, it's a lot smaller than the problems and the situations that other people go through, you know, in this country and in life in general. So I think I'm very fortunate in ways that it isn't something worse that I'm having to deal with. But at the same time, like, you're not alone, like, you never will be, and it's not something that's going to kill you, like, no matter how bad the panic attack or anxiety is in that moment, the attack, like it's not going to kill you. And that's probably the best advice I took from, I don't know, who was it, a doctor or a friend maybe, that like you cannot die from a panic attack. You cannot die from anxiety. And that's probably something that I try to reiterate in my head when I am in that moment. And it kind of gives me comfort in ways. It's hard to advise on it, but yeah, that's kind of what I'd like to instill in it.
No, I totally appreciate that. And for sure, like the questions like that, it's never like they're looking for a right or wrong answer, because it's ultimately you're living through your lived experience of it, and how anxiety manifests in one person can be different to another person, and what response or what kind of, what action you take that works for you might not work for someone else. But I do think it's always so beneficial and so important just to share. I believe it's sharing your solution, because while that might not be the fix for someone else, it does help reinforce that, hey, as you kind of alluded to there, there is a way through this, there is a path out of this, there is things that can help. And I suppose, like, to that point, like, I know I was reading a previous article that you did, Ash, and I think it was with the Sun Independent, but one of the quotes just that jumped out at me was that you'd said that you knew you'd lost yourself, like, at a time early in your life. And obviously, I'm not coming out now just to dig through kind of everything that was happening around then, but I suppose it's such a strong statement to say, like, you know, you felt like you had lost yourself. And what I was curious about, and kind of what I would put to you in terms of a question, would be what helped you to find yourself and to rebuild yourself coming through, like, we've talked about depression, anxiety, panic attacks, you've mentioned trauma. Like, what helped you kind of put those pieces back together and get moving forward again?
I think initially it was just recognizing that what I was doing and the people that I was surrounded with and the situations that I put myself in was inevitably my downfall. And it took obviously a very long time to identify that. So basically I just went back to my roots, kind of surrounding myself with good people. I just think when you lose yourself, you have a decision to make. Like, you know, are you just going to fall into this hole, or are you just going to try and get back out of it? But for me, it was just, again, surrounding myself with good people, going back to training, focusing on things that made me happy. And naturally, I kind of did that, but I felt like I had no choice because, you know, again, I got myself in such a deep, dark place that, like, I was just done with that. I think you come to a point anyway where you're just done with it, like. I just, again, surrounding myself with good people, like training, sport. Sport was obviously inevitably the main factor there, like, in just going back to my family too. Like, there was times where I didn't talk to people that I used to talk to, even my best of friends. They'd try and help me or tell me I was doing something wrong, and I just completely turned my back on people. And I think it was going back to those people. Like, that's the thing, the beauty of it too, is those people will always be there for you no matter what you go through in life, good or bad. And they're the people that mattered the most. And for me, it was my family, like, and my best friends and my relations or my sport. Like, that was the time to, you know, where things started to come back to normal a bit.
And one of the things, I suppose, I'm curious what your experience is. I know when you're in a dark place or when people are going through difficult times, and you can kind of withdraw, or you can isolate yourself, or like you said there, people will try and help and you turn your back on them or tell them to go away politely or not so politely at different times. But I suppose, because as you find the courage to kind of open up to those people and to be more authentic and, I suppose, to let people into either, I suppose, A, what you're dealing with, but then B, kind of what you're trying to achieve or move forward with. Did it surprise you then, and in some ways, that it, rather than maybe breaking down or challenging those relationships, that in time it may have strengthened them or helped them to be better friends, better family, better whatever the relationship was? But did you find that to be the case, that if you opened up and gave a little more, that the relationship may have strengthened?
Absolutely. And I think when people, like, obviously you're on one side of it, like, you can only see it from your point of view, but I think looking at it from the other side, or if I see somebody else struggling, I think when you lose a friend or you lose somebody, you know, to a different life or whatever the case may be, like if that was me looking at myself, like, and if you had lost that person, like my family and my friends probably thought that they would have lost me forever because I'd either end up never the same again or dead, like one or the other. So I think it's like losing a child. It's like a child being kidnapped, but you find them in time. And especially when it took so long too, like it took maybe 4 years or more to actually get me back to being myself and obviously better. So I think for them, that was a massive relief. Like that was a huge relief. And I think that in turn naturally like builds relationships so much better. It's the same as personal experience. When you go through something so difficult and you come out the other side of it, you're actually twice, if not 10 times as strong as what you were before that. Like if I was to look back at myself in those times, I wouldn't even recognize myself, you know, and that the person that I am today. And I feel like that's the same thing as happens to relationships, is when you watch somebody going through something so toxic that could have ended up, you know, being very serious or losing that person. I think you never want to lose them again. And the fear of losing them builds those relationships, you know. And now, and again, for me, then obviously as a person, it just shows me like how much that I was wrong, you know, that like I always thought these people are against me, like, you know, they'll stray or they don't have my back. Like I couldn't have been more wrong. And you grow so much of more of an appreciation and respect for those people.
Yeah. And like, so you say there, like if you're to look back at yourself, you may not recognize yourself. And I suppose what, to who you are today, the person talking to me and having this conversation that we're having, Aisling, rather than describing the person that you are, what are the biggest differences in those two people that you will be most proud of, or that have, I suppose, the changes that you've ultimately made in your life because you're here and you're talking about it now? What are those changes or differences that you'll be most proud of?
I think the first one would be able to like control my aggression. Like I've always been a very soft person deep down, but I think my first defense is attack, especially back then. Like my first defense was always attack. And I think I can control that a lot better than I used to. And I think like just having an understanding too of where people are coming from or certain situations, or just having that control, being able to control myself. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've learned. And I guess being able to understand, having an understanding for people too, like, I think just being able to emotionally connect myself with someone and understand what they're going through or how they're feeling, that obviously comes from personal experience. But that's why I'm so grateful for it, because when you can identify with a human, something they've gone through, and they mightn't even have to open their mouth, you know, where you can read maybe something that might be going on in their head, or even being able to connect with somebody on an emotional level like that is something that I'm very grateful for.
And is that like that kind of process, or I suppose as you increase your self-awareness and sense of self, then that it then also heightens your emotional intelligence for the people around you, and that I suppose, A, you can try to be a better person for yourself first and foremost, but then it also gives you a capability or a capacity to be a better friend or partner or daughter or sister or whatever. Exactly. It may be to other people too. Have I picked that up right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it too. Like, naturally, as a teenager, you think your parents are against you, like, but you know, we've all been through tough things, like, in our lives, and you know, so have my parents. And I think just even having an understanding for them, I think everyone sees their parents differently, like, but I think having that relationship and even being able to confide in them as much as they can confide in me, like, usually I'm the first port of call when it comes to anything to do with my parents or my siblings. And I think even having that responsibility, I really do enjoy it, and I feel honoured that, like, I'm in that position. I'm the youngest, you see, of three siblings, or two siblings, and my mum and dad. But like, if they're ever in any trouble, like, I'm usually the first phone call. And you know, it's a great feeling that you know they have that much trust, or again, we wouldn't be big on emotions or expressing them, but when things go wrong, inevitably, like, you see like how much you mean to them, like, as a person and as a daughter or sister, I guess.
And I suppose, like, you mentioned when things go wrong there, and I think it is always important to acknowledge when, be it at an individual level, when someone's on a journey of recovery or trying to process well-being challenges, that there's usually significant ups and downs. And even you said earlier, it might have taken 5 years in terms of you rebuilding yourself. Like, that's not a, or sorry, 4 years, but, like, that's very rarely a 4 year of an upward trajectory. You know, there's a lot of spikes in there and peaks and troughs and highs and lows. And
oh, yeah.
I suppose what I was going to ask you about was, I suppose, that journey that you have been on, and then, like, a couple of years ago when there was an incident on a night out, and I suppose from that incident becomes a court case and there was no criminal charges. But I suppose one of the things what was different for you in terms of a lot of other people was that all of a sudden became a front page newspaper article and it was covered in national media. I suppose reflecting back on that now, kind of a couple of years in the rearview mirror, like, how difficult of a time was that, and how challenging was that period of time in your life?
I've been through a few things in my life, but I would say it was probably the worst thing that I've ever experienced, like, personally, emotionally, whatever way you want to put it. Like, it was definitely the toughest experience I've had to endure, like, in my life. And it's so hard to even put into words now. I know it feels, well, to me, it still replays. Like, even, you know, I talk to certain people about it and they say, geez, you know, people have forgotten about that. Like, whereas obviously for me, it's something that's never going to be forgotten. But yeah, but what broke my heart, I guess, the most was my family having to endure it, you know, as much as I had to. Because I think when they read something in the media or they pick up a paper or walk into a shop or it's topic of conversation when they meet someone, or else people are avoiding them, to me, that was probably the biggest heartbreak.
You say there you feel like it's the most difficult thing or most challenging that you've had to overcome. What made that so difficult for you?
I just felt like, you see, you know, going back to 2009 and kind of that teenage years and those difficult moments, I thought that was probably the worst thing that my family would have to endure when it came to me. And I guess, like, the years after that, especially with Club and County and sport and all that, were so successful that I felt like I was repaying those dues, like, all along. And obviously, being, you know, a person that was pretty much, like, very out there in social media, and I built a good platform for myself, and I would have been respected highly around the country. And I think it was the disappointment that I felt within myself, and I felt like I had just taken all that good away from my family and what I represented and what we represented as a whole, like, and I felt like I just destroyed that reputation. So it just felt like my whole world had fallen apart, like, in a split second.
Yeah, like, how, I suppose my first question back at you is that kind of harsh view of that it was all just removed and taken away. Do you still feel that way?
No, because I do in certain ways, but, like, then again, when I go back to being so prominent on social media and public figure and all that kind of crack, like, I actually gained a lot of my anxiety and kind of PTSD, or whatever you want to call it, through being a public figure. Like, initially in my career when it was happening, I never took much notice of it, because I didn't really pay attention to social media. But I think as the years went on, and, you know, I started to worry more about maybe Instagram or Twitter rather than focusing on my sport and my training. And I think, so, like, obviously after that time in 2018, I completely came off social media. Like, I took down my Instagram, all that kind of stuff. All my social pages were gone. And it was probably the best thing that I've ever done for myself. And I felt, you know, like, again, social media to me is an addiction for some people, and it probably became an addiction as such for me. And at the end of the day, it was what I was making a living off too. Like, not to say that I ever opened up to make a living. Like, sure, initially I said it never bothered me. I never read anything. I never looked at anything. But obviously I got a lot of opportunities along the way. And I think eventually it became an addiction where I felt like I had to do it because I was, first of all, I was earning a living off it. But at the same time, I felt like that was probably my identity too as a person. Like, without social media, what am I? Like, I'm a nobody without social media, do you know? And that's I actually saw a documentary there recently on it too. Like, is there's a lot of people that have ended up, you know, committing suicide and things like that because followers are just so important to them. You know, it's the be all and end all. It's your identity as a human. So without that platform, nobody knows you. Who are you? And I wouldn't say I'd go that far to that extent, but obviously social media was a huge part of me. Like, and I think the relief, even when the girls, let's say, before the All-Ireland final, some of them deleted apps or deleted social media so they wouldn't see certain things about the game, and the relief that they felt, you know, being away from that, being away from people having such an open platform to criticise you and make comments and things like that, you know, the difference that made to me was just unbelievable, and I'd never go back. Like, I could go back now and go on Instagram now. Obviously, being a personal trainer from a business point of view, like, that's probably the only way that I would, but I'd be even scared enough not to share personal things, but you're just always open to criticism, you know, and you're open to critics, like, on social media, and that's probably a scary thought, but we're 4 years on now from the incident, so I do feel a lot more comfortable in myself again, but obviously that took a lot of time to get to this point.
Yeah, totally. And I suppose, like, if I was to ask you who you are now and kind of how you view yourself, and say you've mentioned there, if I was an influencer and you said about doing it for work, so I presume that was like ambassadorial stuff and sponsorship kind of stuff. For chunks of your life, you've been a camogie player and an athlete. If I was to ask you that same question now, kind of sitting here, having talked to me for an hour about the highs and lows and the ups and downs of your life, like, how do you view and look upon yourself now?
I don't know. Again, I just feel like I've so much more of an understanding of who I am, like, and what I represent, and even what life is about, and certain emotions. Even me being in a relationship, like, such a different feeling, because I think for 6 or 7 years I just had such a wall, and it probably crept back to that time in 2009 where, you know, I kept a lot of people out, like, and kept a lot of people at a distance. Whereas now, you know, I feel like I'm a lot more open, like, a lot more approachable. Just a greater understanding on life outside of a screen, you know. I just appreciate life so much more. I appreciate people so much more, even going into work. And, like, a lot of our clients would be elderly too, like, that use the pool and stuff. And they come in, and the conversations we have about sport and matches, and, like, that's their life, you know. And I feel like I add so much to that, even if it's as much as a small conversation for 5 minutes. You add so much to their life. And I think I've just so much more of an appreciation for people and kind of what you do for them. And your role as a human is a lot more wider than you think. Like, your role as an athlete, you mean so much more to kids and adults than you could ever believe. And just for me to have that understanding that, like, they can come to me and have a conversation, or they feel a certain way about me, like, I think that just gives me so much pride in myself that I had probably lost before. And again, you just think that the whole world is against you, but you soon come to find out that they're not. But just having the ability to not be behind a screen and have an actual one-to-one conversation with someone has made such a difference to my life, like, just being more approachable and more open, I guess, to relationships.
Yeah, and it also sounds like those experiences, I suppose, both on the field and off the field, have also, while you've reflected on them to grow your self-awareness and understanding of yourself, it does sound like too that it's also given you a greater sense of perspective, for in your life? And I suppose, is that something you're appreciative? I mean, I think I know the answer already, but I suppose, so even if I change it, like, how has that benefited your life now in terms of being happier on a day-to-day basis, trying to have better sport-life balance? How has that perspective and that self-awareness helped you?
I think just having a perspective in general, just having a whole, again, when you just go through these different experiences, it always gives you a new perspective, but I think it's just an extremely healthy one I have now, you know. It's like I'm just so fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, and again, without those things happening, like, I would never have that come to that realization. Like, I think it's completely transformed me as a person. And yeah, that's a tough question now, but I don't know. I just think inevitably, like, just having a perspective on those situations and just a better understanding of why they happened, how they happened, but how that they've bettered me too, just has obviously had a big impact on, I guess, just life now at the moment.
And I think, kind of as we just look to wrap this up, Ashton, like, I think just as I'm reflecting on what we've talked about today, like, I think you're someone who has experienced extreme highs. I think of you, like, lifting an All-Ireland trophy in the Hogan Stand, like the celebrations on the pitch, getting to celebrate those with families and hugs and tears of joy, and then also hugs and tears of sadness and of grief and of trauma, and different things that you've experienced. Like, you really have, just even, we were only talking for an hour and you've covered so much, and I honestly just obviously want to just thank you so much for that honesty, because I know it's going to relate to so many people in different ways. I suppose my last question for you would just be, taking kind of all those learnings and all that perspective and just the life lessons that you've been so gracious to share with us today, if you could go back in time to that sense of your 16-year-old self who was sitting there, not knowing what's ahead of her, not knowing what she's got to go through, what would, if you could, what would you like to chat with her about if you got to have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea to kind of try steer in the right direction? What would you say?
I just don't think there's anything that I would change, because I've often even thought about that myself, is if I was to go back, like, what would I do different, or where would I like to be? But again, I just feel like I was born to be on this roller coaster, and it's going to end up somewhere great. Like, I really do. And that's probably the advice kind of in what I've just said, is like, no matter the highs and lows, like, there's always something great that will come of it. And I've always said that. And sometimes I've said it without even understanding what I mean. But again, I have a greater understanding now than I ever could. That, like, life is so difficult. Like, it's so hard. That's probably the one thing I would say, that is, life is very, very difficult. And it's so, so hard. But the things that you learn about yourself as a human is, and life lessons and things like that, is just something that I've came to appreciate so much. Even the experiences, I appreciate them so much. And, like, life is what you make it at the end of the day. Like, we can all go through tough times and traumatic experiences. I've been lucky not to have some of them, you know, but at the end of the day, it's what you make of it. Like, for me, even the last one in 2018 and where I am now, like, I just couldn't have it any better. You know, I couldn't be in a greater position that I wanted to be, even physically, you know, in terms of my performance as an athlete. Like, I've worked my ass off for the last 2 years to be in the position that I am. And I know for sure that I'm only going to get better. But that's just the attitude I have in life, that, like, anything that knocks you down, like, life is a roller coaster, but don't let it defeat you, like, because the only person that's going to defeat you is yourself, nobody else. No substance or thing or person or media or anyone can defeat you. And I think that's the most important thing to know, like, that when people kick you when you're down, like, they're only kicking you because they know how powerful that you are as a human. And that's probably the biggest thing that I've learned, is just live life. It's never going to be easy for anyone, but you make it.
I think that's the perfect note to wrap up on, Ashton. So from my perspective, I just want to say thank you for sharing and talking to us today about everything you have. Best of luck with everything in the future. And I'm also just very grateful to have got to have this conversation with you today. So Ashlyn Thompson, thank you.
Thanks a million. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
The Players' Voice podcast is brought to you by the Gaelic Players Association in collaboration with Real Talks. To listen to previous episodes with leading inter-county GA players like Patrick Horgan and Aisling Maloney, make sure to subscribe by searching The Players' Voice on whichever podcast platform you prefer. And while there, you'd really be helping us out if you rated or reviewed the show. My name is Alan O'Mara, and to find out more about my work as a performance and wellbeing consultant, please go to www.realtalks.ie or find me on Twitter and Instagram at AOMTheCat. And please don't forget, you can find out more about the GPA's Bio360 programme by visiting bio360.gaelicplayers.com. Thanks for listening.